On the 12th day of Christmas, Harry Potter gave to me
12 Christmas trees,
11 chocolate frogs,
10 pumpkin pasties,
9 fizzing wisbies,
8 magic wands,
7 Christmas puddings,
6 Weasley sweaters,
5 golden snitches,
4 sugar quills,
3 dung bombs,
2 Weasley twins,
and a Christmas at Hogwarts Castle.
The Half-Blood Princesses proudly present The Magic of Christmas. Happy Christmas to me!
Happy Christmas, Jess! I can't believe it's already Christmas Eve.
I know! This year has flown by.
It really has, so I couldn't be more excited to be kicking back by the fire with my warm cup of butterbeer, getting ready to talk all about Harry's Christmases.
Speaking of Christmas, our Weasley sweaters came in early this year, and they are so nice and warm.
Shout out to Molly for being the best ever.
Thank you, Mrs. Weasley.
Polly's going to be out tonight delivering all of our Christmas parcels to our friends and family. We're so excited, but before we go to sleep, let's dive into the magic of Christmas.
Oh look, our Christmas quote is underneath the tree. Let's go get it. It's time for Quick Quotes Corner.
The quote for this episode comes from Chapter 12 of Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone called The Mirror of Erised. Professor McGonagall had come around the week before making a list of students who would be staying for the holidays. And Harry had signed up at once. He didn't feel sorry for himself at all. This would probably be the best Christmas he'd ever had. Ron and his brothers were staying too, because Mr. and Mrs. Weasley were going to Romania to visit Charlie.
For most children, staying at school during the holidays would not be fun, especially if they had to stay to do extra schoolwork or study for exams. In fact, it should feel downright depressing not being able to see your family for the holidays. Or, in Harry's case, another reminder that he didn't have a set of parents or relatives who loved him to go home to. Yet, Harry's assumptions are true. This would be the best Christmas he'd ever had because, frankly, this is Hogwarts. The lovely Christmas decorations and yummy dinner are proof that at Hogwarts, the students are not merely pupils. They are a family that deserves love and all the happiness during the holiday season. Along with Dumbledore, who feels more like a father/mentor to Harry, the Weasleys are there, who welcome Harry into their family as if he were their only non-redheaded brother. Family is forever, and while they're not related by blood, Harry finally has one. Also, I think this Christmas is what cements Hogwarts as Harry's first real home.
I agree with everything you said, and I'd also like to add that Christmas is a magical time of year in general, so being able to spend it at a wizarding school where magic is everywhere is even more incredible. So Harry is really in for an amazing treat for his first Christmas at Hogwarts. Oh no, Polly's out delivering our parcels, and there's a really bad snowstorm. I hope she can make it back with our fun facts. Oh yay, I hear pecking on our window. Hey, it's Polly, our owl. She's flying in with the fun facts.
Before we dive into Harry's Christmases, I wanted to share with you some interesting things about the British Christmas experience. First, Brits say Happy Christmas instead of Merry Christmas. They may also call Christmas Crimbo or sometimes Crimble. People in the UK call Santa Claus Father Christmas and say that he lives and works in Lapland, not the North Pole. School-age children do write letters to Father Christmas, but instead of mailing them, they burn the letters in the fireplace. So the ashes fly up the chimney to Lapland and Father Christmas can read the smoke. British children hang their stockings at the end of their beds, not above the fireplace. Children also leave out brandy and a mince pie for Father Christmas, not milk and cookies. On Crimbo, the UK doesn't usually get snow, but people always want a white Christmas. The UK Meteorological Office is in charge of determining whether it will be a white Christmas or not. They say that in order to have a white Christmas, a single snowflake has to be spotted falling in the 24 hours of Christmas Day. Citizens have a white Christmas about every 4 or 5 years. Real snow appears on Christmas Day in about 1 in 10 years, but this happens in Scotland most of the time. Let's talk about Christmas Day. The main Christmas meal is usually eaten at lunchtime. On the table are Christmas crackers, which are brightly decorated cardboard tubes. Once grabbed and pulled apart, a tiny explosive in the cracker goes off, and it makes a cracking sound. Inside the cracker is a cheesy plastic prize, a paper crown, and a terrible joke, like the ones Americans see on the back of popsicle sticks. It is mandatory for the whole family to wear the paper crowns inside the Christmas crackers. The main dish at dinner is roast turkey, along with bacon-wrapped chipolatas, which are mini pork sausages, roast potatoes, and veggies, traditionally Brussels sprouts. There's also gravy and bread sauce to smother everything in. Bread sauce is a sauce that's thickened with bread. Let's talk about desserts. You'll see here that all of these contain fruit and alcohol. Christmas cake consists of rich dried fruits that are marinated in brandy or sometimes rum and mixed into a delicious, rich, heavily spiced cake. People make the cake as early as September and then feed it at various periods with a little more brandy to help mature the cake. The cake could have icing or not and is eaten from Christmas Eve onwards. Trifle is made in a large bowl with a layer of sponge cake or sponge fingers at the bottom. The cake is soaked in sherry and brandy. Following this cake layer is a layer of fruit suspended in a fruit-flavored jelly. Last but not least is a layer of custard and then whipped cream. Mince pies were originally made of a spiced sweet meat mixture. Today, they are made with sweet mincemeat, which is a mixture of dried fruits, sugar, spices, and brandy. The mixture is held together with suet, or saturated fat, and wrapped in light melting pastry. Christmas pudding is made on Stir Up Sunday, which is the last Sunday before the start of Advent, around the end of November. Families will work together to stir the mixture, make a wish, and add a few coins to the batter. The pudding is a dark, sticky, and dense sponge, more like a fruitcake made of mixed dried fruit, candied fruit peel, apple, and citrus zests. It also includes brandy and spices, which add flavor and make it a signature dark color. To make it, you boil the cake, soak it in alcohol, let it age for several months, boil it again, soak it in alcohol again, and then set it on fire. Every Christmas Day at 3 p.m. on BBC America, there is a royal Christmas message given by the Queen, where she reflects on the events of the past year. Around 6 p.m. is Christmas tea, which is another sit-down with family and treats. The day after Christmas is always Boxing Day. The origins are unclear. It could have been a day when workers would receive a box of gifts from their bosses. Others say it's a day when people would box up gifts for the poor. Currently, Boxing Day is the British version of Black Friday, a day for non-stop shopping. Finally, British people believe that the Christmas tree and all decorations should be taken down within 12 days of Christmas. Otherwise, you'll have bad luck for the rest of the year. Wow, all of these traditions are super interesting, but now it's time to talk about Harry Potter and his Christmases.
Now, it's time to dive into the book topic of the week for Tales of Magic and Mischief.
Oh, look, here comes the Ghost of Christmas Past. Oh, wait, we're talking about the Harry Potter series. My bad. Let's start by talking about Harry's Christmases at Hogwarts. Before Christmas in Sorcerer's Stone, Hogwarts was covered in several feet of snow, and the lake froze over. The Weasley twins were punished for bewitching several snowballs so that they followed Quirrell around, bouncing off the back of his turban. This is so funny. They're literally hitting Voldemort with snowballs.
That is really funny, and Voldemort can't really, like, defend himself or say anything because nobody's supposed to know he's there. So I imagine his face just getting smashed with these snowballs and him having to, like, bite his tongue from saying anything.
Hey, maybe that's why he has no nose.
Yeah, that's a good theory.
One day after potions, the trio follow Hagrid, who is bringing the last large fir Christmas tree to the Great Hall. Once there, they see the decorations McGonagall and Flitwick are putting up. Holly and mistletoe cover the walls. 12 Christmas trees stand nearby, some with tiny icicles and some glittering with hundreds of candles. Professor Flitwick has golden bubbles coming out of his wand, and he trails them over the branches of the new Christmas tree. How pretty is this? Why do you think there are 12 Christmas trees?
I have no idea.
Me either. I mean, the only biblical reference I can think of is like 12 apostles, but this school doesn't seem very religious.
Yeah, but then again, they do celebrate Christmas, so obviously the wizards are associated with that religion, so that makes sense, but I don't know, 12 is a nice number to have, and if you think of 12 days of Christmas, like, the number 12 is associated with, like, Christmassy things.
Yeah, and maybe they put it up 12 days before Christmas.
Oh, I like that idea.
Harry wakes up early on Christmas morning to see presents he wasn't expecting to receive. He got a flute from Hagrid that he whittled himself, and it sounded like an owl when you blew into it.
That's such a peaceful sound. I love that.
Or it was really badly made and your ears are bleeding.
Yeah, but think of Hedwig, and Harry hearing that flute might remind him of Hedwig.
True. The next thing he receives is a note from the Dursleys with a 50 pence piece taped to it. I googled this, and that's 67 cents. They really do suck.
Yeah, and we see that as a trend throughout the rest of Harry's Christmases, that the Dursleys don't give the best gifts.
I mean, I'm surprised they gave him anything at all, to be honest. So Harry gives the money to Ron because he's fascinated by it. Harry also gets his first Weasley sweater, which is emerald green, and a box of homemade fudge from Mrs. Weasley, along with a box of chocolate frogs from Hermione.
I love how the Weasley sweater is green because it matches Harry's eyes.
Yeah, and I think it's super cute because Mrs. Weasley makes all her kids' sweaters, and so basically she's adopting Harry as one of her kids. Also, plus, who wouldn't want a Weasley sweater? I mean, like I was talking about earlier, they're warm and they're made with love. So the last present is everyone's favorite. It contains Harry's very rare and valuable invisibility cloak. It is fluid and silvery gray and feels like water woven into material. After Harry tries it on, he reads the note that fell out of it. Written in narrow, loopy writing he had never seen before were the following words. Your father left this in my possession before he died. It is time it was returned to you. Use it well. A very Merry Christmas to you. The note is not signed. So first, how cool is this gift? And second, how would you feel if you got something that belonged to your deceased dad and also from a person who you don't know?
I just think it's an all-around mysterious and beautiful situation because, yes, the cloak is the coolest thing ever, but just think if Harry would have gotten something less unique and more common that was his dad's. It would have had the same reaction, like, my father's gone, but this mystery person is giving me a gift that was his. So honestly, no matter what that present would have been, it would have meant a lot to Harry.
Yeah, true. And if you think about it, maybe James would have given it to Harry on his 11th birthday because he used it all the time at Hogwarts. So it's like passing down a legacy to his son.
Yeah, that's exactly what would have happened because we know with the story of the Deathly Hallows and everything, how it was passed down from the third brother through the generations. So James would have eventually given it to Harry.
Here comes my favorite part. The twins burst in, both wearing blue Weasley sweaters with a yellow F and G on them. It's hilarious here because Fred remarks that Harry's sweater is better than theirs. She obviously makes more of an effort if you're not family. George chastises Ron for not wearing his, and Ron says he hates maroon, but puts it on. You haven't got a letter on yours, George observed. I suppose she thinks you don't forget your name. But we're not stupid. We know we're called Gred and Forge. This is the most iconic line in this book.
It really is, and I also love this because the Weasley sweaters are obviously a tradition and mean a lot to all of them. And the twins, because of the way they are, they're making a joke, but still there's so much love behind their words.
Exactly. Plus, it's kind of funny how Ron gets maroon every year because he's a redhead, and so it probably doesn't look very good. Percy comes in to investigate the noise. Fred seizes Percy's sweater and says, P for prefect. The twins force the sweater over his head and knock his glasses askew. If this wasn't bad enough, George tells Percy he's not sitting with the prefects because Christmas is a time for family. They march Percy out. This is my favorite thing. Then, at Christmas dinner, there's 100 fat roast turkeys, mountains of roast and boiled potatoes, platters of chipolatas, tureens of buttered peas, silver boats of thick, rich gravy and cranberry sauce, and stacks of wizard crackers every few feet along the table.
That's a laid-out dinner. I'd want to be a part of it.
Yeah, it sounds so yummy. So Harry and Fred pull a wizard cracker that blasts like a cannon and engulfs them in blue smoke, while from the inside exploded a rear admiral's hat and several live white mice. Ew! What kind of present is that?
I don't like that it's mice. I wish it would have been fairies or something.
Yeah, that would have been cool. Meanwhile, Dumbledore is sitting at the high table wearing a flowered bonnet and laughing at a joke Flitwick read him. Percy nearly breaks a tooth on a silver sickle inside his piece of flaming Christmas pudding, and Hagrid's face gets redder as he calls for more wine and kisses McGonagall on the cheek, who giggles and blushes. That's so funny. That's so funny.
There has to be some kind of McGonagall and Hagrid love story fanfic out there somewhere.
That'd be funny. Harry leaves with a bunch of stuff from the wizard crackers. A pack of non-explodable luminous balloons, a grow-your-own-warts kit, and his own new wizard chess set. Grow-your-own-warts? That's so gross. Like, can we please give it to Percy? So then Harry and the Weasleys have a snowball fight, and Harry loses to chess against Ron in the common room and thinks he wouldn't have lost so badly if Percy hadn't tried to help him. They all eat turkey sandwiches, crumpets, trifle, and Christmas cake, and watch Percy chase the twins as they stole his prefect badge before the day ends. What a perfect Christmas!
It's so lighthearted and fun, and I'm really happy that Harry's first Christmas at Hogwarts was that magical. Next, we're going to move on to Chamber of Secrets. In Harry's second year, Christmas morning dawned cold and white. I love white Christmases. I'm not a big fan of winter, but I always love waking up on Christmas morning to find snow.
It really is a magical sight.
Not many people stayed behind for Christmas this year because of all the attacks and the Chamber of Secrets being open, but Harry gets to spend Christmas with Ron, Hermione, and the Weasleys. On Christmas morning, Hermione barges into Harry and Ron's dormitory with presents, and Ron kind of tells her off because she's not supposed to be in there, but Hermione sets it all straight by saying sarcastically, "Merry Christmas to you too." Then Hedwig flies in with a parcel for Harry, and then they get down to opening presents. Hedwig being on speaking terms with Harry again is a way better present than the one she brought, which is from the Dursleys, a toothpick, and a note asking Harry if he can stay at Hogwarts for the summer holiday too. They literally suck so bad. Harry's other gifts are way better. He gets a large tin of treacle toffee from Hagrid, a book called Flying with the Cannons from Ron, a luxury eagle feather quill from Hermione, which is super awesome. I'd want that one. And a new hand-knitted sweater and a plum cake from Mrs. Weasley. The Christmas feast in the Great Hall is as amazing as ever. It's decked out with the usual 12 frost-covered Christmas trees, streamers of holly and mistletoe, and enchanted snow is falling warm and dry from the ceiling. I love the snow, but question, does it dissolve or something before it like hits the table, or is there fake snow all through their food and drinks?
I don't know, but since it's dry snow, I would assume that there would be like dust everywhere if it dissolved, and like that could get all over your clothes and hair, and that might kind of be gross. So I don't know, maybe there's an enchantment where it falls so low and then just goes back up to the ceiling?
Maybe, or if it just like disappears in like a burst of sparkles or something.
Yeah, but then you get sparkles all over your food and drinks too.
Yeah. I don't know. I want to know how that works. I want to talk to the Hogwarts Great Hall Magic Department.
These are important questions, people.
Dumbledore leaves everybody in a few of his favorite carols, and Hagrid booms louder and louder with every goblet of eggnog he drinks. What do you think Dumbledore's favorite carols are, and how funny is it that Hagrid is literally getting drunk and is celebrating so crazily that he's belting out these carols?
I mean, first, it doesn't surprise me that Hagrid's getting drunk because we saw that in his first Christmas, and he was a little bit rowdier then because he kissed McGonagall, but I don't know about Dumbledore's favorite carols. I don't see him as a very, like, faithful person, so he wouldn't do anything religious. I think he'd find the most ridiculous songs and sing them.
Fred bewitched Percy's badge to read Pinhead, and Percy doesn't realize this and doesn't know why everybody's snickering at them, which is a classic twin move. But then Draco's out here bragging about a new sweater he got, and I just want to point out here that this is super important here because a lot of times, especially when we're younger, kids like to talk about what they got and brag about it. But with somebody like Draco, who comes from a rich family, he doesn't really take into consideration that others around him don't have the same Christmas experience or gifts like Ron. But if you look at Ron, you see with the Weasley family that gifts come with love. So it's interesting to look at what the holiday means to these different characters.
Yeah, honestly, I don't think Draco cares if he's hurting anyone's feelings about his present because he just wants everybody to know how great he is. Whereas Ron is just like, I have some nice gifts. I'm not going to say anything because I'm above that. So in a way, Ron is a lot more mature than Draco at this point.
I definitely agree. And of course, Christmas dinner wraps up with the Christmas pudding, which Harry and Ron have 3 helpings of. So my question to you is, what is your favorite Christmas dessert?
My favorite dessert is these cookies that my grandma makes. They look like ribbons and they have multiple colors on them. And they're really pretty and really yummy. And it takes her forever to make them because she uses like 3 different kinds of dough.
My mom and I make all the Christmas cookies together and we make a ton of different kinds. So I don't really know what my favorite is, but I love having cookies on Christmas.
The holiday spirit is in the air in Prisoner of Azkaban when Professor Flitwick decorates his classroom with shimmering lights that turned out to be real fluttering fairies. Shout out to Professor Flitwick for being so creative and festive.
He's literally like one of my favorite professors. He's just so down to earth and so talented, so nice. I feel like being around him for Christmas time would just be so fun.
Yeah, and he's so tiny. He's like a little spirited elf.
I know, I love it.
In the rest of the castle, thick streamers of holly and mistletoe were strung along the corridors. Mysterious lights shone from inside every suit of armor, and the great hall was filled with its usual 12 Christmas trees, glittering with golden stars. The yummy smells of cooking filled the corridors as well. On Christmas morning, Harry was woken by Ron throwing his pillow at him. Oi, presents! This makes me laugh. It's such a boy thing to do, and even though it's Christmas, I wouldn't want to be woken up like that.
Seriously though, like, being woken up on Christmas in the most ridiculous ways is part of Christmas. You know what I mean? Like, I can't tell you how many times my sister came in my room when I was younger at like 4:30 or a crazy time and just like shaking me or like yelling or something to wake me up.
Yeah, I was that kid who woke everybody else up.
I was the one who slept in. I was the one getting woken up.
Yeah, no, I was up. As soon as the sun rose, I was like, dude, it's Christmas. We waking up now. So Harry puts on his glasses and sees presents at the foot of his bed while Ron rips his open. This is so funny. It's like Harry is the older brother being jumped on by his younger sibling on Christmas morning.
I love it. It's so pure.
It really is. Ron gets another maroon sweater and a pair of matching socks from Mrs. Weasley. Mrs. Weasley also made Harry a sweater. This one is scarlet with the Gryffindor lion knitted on the front. She also gave him a dozen home-baked mince pies, some Christmas cake, and a box of nut brittle. I love Mrs. Weasley. That is so yummy. And honestly, how cool is that sweater? Like, it's so detailed.
Yeah, I love it so much, and it just shows that Molly really goes out of her way to make Harry feel like part of the family by taking so much time with his sweaters.
Then, inside a long, thin package underneath his other gifts, is the Firebolt, complete with its glittering, vibrating handle that, when let go, the broom will hang in midair at the right height to mount it. His eyes moved from the golden registration number at the top of the handle right down to the perfectly smooth, streamlined birch twigs that made up the tail. It's like getting the Holy Grail.
It really is, and that's the perfect present for Harry. He loves Quidditch so much. Like, that is the best gift you could have possibly given him.
Yeah, and not playing Quidditch for him is like losing a limb. So it was so sad when his Nimbus broke, but it just makes this book all the better because he got like a fantastic present. So the boys talk about who could have given Harry the broom. Ron suggests Dumbledore, who gave him the cloak, and says he probably didn't put his name on the gift so as not to show favoritism. Malfoy would be all over him for that. And speaking of Malfoy, he'll be so jealous when he sees this. Truth. Truth, truth, truth.
Daddy couldn't get you a better broom than Potter.
Ron also suggests the possibility of Lupin getting it for Harry, since he likes Harry and was away during the Quidditch match where Harry's Nimbus broke. But before they can continue this conversation, Hermione comes in holding Crookshanks. The poor cat has tinsel tied around his neck. I would hate Hermione if I was that cat. Ron tells her not to bring Crookshanks in there and puts Scabbers in his pajama pocket. Hermione notices the broom and gets suspicious because it's an expensive gift, and why would someone spend that kind of money and not tell Harry who it was from? Ron dismisses her and asks Harry if he can ride the broom, but Hermione says that no one should ride the broom yet. Ron retorts, "What do you think Harry's going to do with it? Sweep the floor?" That is so funny. It is literally the sarcasm that just kills me.
Ron has some of the best lines. Like, he's so underrated. I love him.
He really is. But then, Crookshanks makes a wild grab for Scabbers, ripping Ron's pajamas. Ron grabs Scabbers before he can escape and tries to kick the cat, but he ends up kicking Harry's trunk instead and knocking it over. Harry's pocket sneakoscope becomes dislodged from the old pair of Uncle Vernon's socks in his trunk and is going off. After this debacle, Ron kicks Hermione and Crookshanks out of the room and nurses his toe. Harry puts the sneakoscope away, and they both notice that Scabbers is skinny and that patches of his fur had fallen out too. Let me just point out that the sneakoscope is supposed to tell you when someone is lying or disguised, and it literally just went off when it saw Peter Pettigrew. In the common room, Ron and Hermione won't speak to each other due to the whole Crookshanks-Scabbers attack, and Harry busies himself examining the firebolt, which seemed to annoy Hermione. Wait to ruin one of Harry's best Christmases, guys.
I know, but at the same time, she's the only sensible one here. You know what I mean? At this point, we know Sirius Black is out of Azkaban trying to get Harry. And so, like, things aren't great right now. So Hermione's being cautious, and I can't blame her.
I can't blame her either, but honestly, Christmas is a time for happiness, and I wouldn't want to be distracted by that. I just want to think about the amazing present I got and just enjoy myself for one day out of the year, so I would be a little bit ticked off. Lunch is a little strange. Dumbledore decided that since very few people stayed for the holidays, they would all sit together at a table for 12 in the middle of the room. 12 again, people! 12!
That's the Christmas number.
True, true. The house tables were pushed against the walls, and at the table in the middle of the room, there was Dumbledore, McGonagall, Snape, Sprout, Flitwick, Filch, and a very old and rather moldy-looking tailcoat. That's so funny. Two first years, a fifth-year Slytherin, and the trio, who sat at the end of the table. Dumbledore is the only one who seems enthusiastic about this arrangement and offers the end of a cracker to Snape. Inside the cracker is a pointed witch's hat with a stuffed vulture on top, just like Neville's grandmother's hat. This is great because Snape realizes this and he gives the hat to Dumbledore, who puts it on. So Dumbledore looks ridiculous every Christmas because of these stupid crackers.
I love the whole vulture hat thing because Snape is so salty over the whole thing with the Boggart, and then here it's like Christmas and he pulls the hat out. He's probably so pissed off. He probably just wants to get up and leave the Great Hall.
I know. I think that's my favorite Christmas gift that year. Right as they dig in, Professor Trelawney comes in. She had put on a green sequin dress in honor of the occasion, making her look more than ever like a glittering, oversized dragonfly. She's so obnoxious!
She's a freak show, is what she is.
She tells Dumbledore she was crystal gazing and saw herself coming to join them for lunch, and so she did. Dumbledore draws a chair in midair with his wand, and it lands between Snape and McGonagall. As nice and weird as it was for her to come, Trelawney suddenly doesn't want to sit down because if she joins, there'll be 13 people at the table, and when 13 dine together, the first to rise will be the first to die. Way to ruin this further for everybody. Why does she always have to talk about death?
I wonder if she's pals with the Ghost of Christmas Past and Scrooge.
But McGonagall isn't having this. She makes Trelawney sit and offers her food, which she ignores. Trelawney asks about Lupin, and Dumbledore informs her that he's ill again. McGonagall pipes in that surely Trelawney knew that. Trelawney retorts that she knew, but she doesn't like to parade the fact that she's all-knowing. She said she acts as though she's not possessed of the inner eye, so as not to make others nervous. Yeah, that's why you're making people nervous. Not the fact that you look like a bug, but the fact that you quote unquote have the inner eye.
It's honestly ridiculous. Like, her divination skills don't go beyond the prophecy and then the part at the end of this book. But everything else she does is just ridiculous. Like, she's not a true seer. I don't care what anybody says.
Yeah, and McGonagall doesn't take her BS because she says, "That explains a great deal," said McGonagall tartly. Finally, Trelawney goes on the offensive, saying she knows that Lupin won't be with them for much longer, and that Lupin must know this because he wouldn't let her crystal gaze for him. "Imagine that," said Professor McGonagall dryly. I can't with this scene, it's so funny. Dumbledore puts an end to this little spat by saying that Lupin will be fine, especially because Snape made him the potion. 2 hours later, when Harry and Ron both got up from the table at the same time, Trelawney freaks out again, asking who left their seat first. They're unsure, and McGonagall says she doubts it'll make a difference unless a mad axeman is waiting outside the doors to slaughter the first into the entrance hall. Shout out to McGonagall.
I love her, and like, as a professor, you're supposed to respect your colleagues, but she has no patience for divination, so she's like, I don't even care.
She's literally like Hermione in that regard. But she has these little quips that are just so funny. So Harry and Ron leave Hermione talking to McGonagall and are not murdered by Axeman. Sir Cadogan is chilling in his picture with some monks, some previous Hogwarts headmasters, and his fat pony. He toasts the boys with a flagon of mead. How do these portraits get drunk?
I have no idea, and it doesn't make any sense because if these pictures are two-dimensional, it's not like they can like carry three-dimensional glasses and get drunk. Like, I don't know how this works. Like, does somebody paint in these like drinks and random pictures and they go get them and like make them real? Like, I have no idea how this magic works.
Yeah, I mean, because at first I was thinking that, like, there were pictures with wine in them in the castle, but Hogwarts has been around for so long that they've probably already drunk all of it. So someone has to draw more in there. And it's so funny because, like, all of these, like, people just go from frame to frame to frame to get to their friends on the holidays.
It's so funny. I want to know who's drawing the alcohol in the pictures. What should be the twins?
That would make my day. I love Sir Cadogan because when Ron tells him Scurvy Cur for the password, the knight says, "And the same to you, sir."
He's a wacko.
He's so weird. I love him. The quote-unquote fun evening ends when Hermione comes through the portrait hole later, followed by McGonagall, while Harry and Ron are sitting admiring the broom. Hermione hides her face in a book that is upside down, clearly feeling guilty as they see her forehead reddening. McGonagall tells Harry that Hermione told her about the broomstick and confirms that there was no note with it. She says that they'll have to take it for a few weeks to test it for jinxes, and that Harry will get it back if it's jinx-free. If it's jinx-free, what if it's not? They're gonna destroy the broom? Like, how crappy is that? It's like you got this awesome gift, and she's like, "Yeah, we're taking it away from you." Like, I get she's being cautious, but I'd be so sad.
I can't really get mad at Hermione though, or McGonagall, because this is the right thing to do. And we know that he gets it back eventually, but I get for Harry that this totally sucks in the moment, but it's for his safety.
That's true. I don't blame Hermione because I'd probably do the same thing. After McGonagall leaves through the portrait hole, Ron rounds on Hermione, asking her why she ratted them out. Hermione faces him and tells him that she and McGonagall both think that Sirius sent Harry the broom. Christmas ends on that cliffhanger.
This is really significant because we find out at the end of the book that Sirius did give Harry the Firebolt, and it's really special because Sirius wasn't in Harry's life for all those years, and he wasn't able to give him Christmas gifts, but now it's like he's making up for all that time by giving Harry a very special gift. Let's move on to Christmas and Goblet of Fire. We saw with Harry's second and third Christmases that not many people stayed behind at Hogwarts, first because of the Chamber of Secrets thing, and then because of Sirius Black being out of Azkaban. But in Goblet of Fire, it's the complete opposite. Everybody stayed behind because of the Triwizard Tournament and the Yule Ball. Because of the guests from the other schools, the teachers went all out with decorations, and Harry notes that they're the best he's ever seen. Everlasting icicles are attached to the banisters on the marble staircase, the usual 12 Christmas trees are in the Great Hall, and they're decorated with everything from luminous holly berries to real golden hooting owls. The suits of armor have been bewitched to sing carols when people pass them, and Peeves has taken to hiding out in the suits of armor to fill in the gaps in the carols with his own lyrics that are often very rude. I can teach Peeves a thing or two about songwriting.
Honestly, I think that would make my Christmas.
It's so entertaining. Like, that would just bring so much fun to the whole holiday. On Christmas Day, Harry is woken up by Dobby, who is staring down at him. Naturally, Harry freaks out and wakes up Ron, Seamus, Dean, and Neville. I think it's so funny that Seamus asks Harry if someone's attacking him. I don't know why I found that really funny, I do. But Harry says, no, it's just Dobby, and tells everybody to go back to bed, but since they're already up, they dig into their presents. Harry gives Ron a Chudley Cannon hat, and I have to note here that the book mentions how it clashes with his hair because the Chudley Cannon's color is orange and Ron's hair is red. Just imagine this.
And imagine he's also wearing the maroon sweater, so it looks ridiculous together.
I know, oh my god.
He honestly should have picked a team with different colors so that when he got, like, the merch, it wouldn't clash with his hair.
I know, he really should have. Then Dobby gives Harry his present, which is a pair of socks that Dobby knitted himself. The left sock is bright red and has a pattern of broomsticks. The right is green, with a pattern of snitches. After this, Dobby leaves because the house elves are already making Christmas dinner in the kitchen. I love elves, and I love so much that the elves are so involved with Christmas because in the Muggle world, elves are a huge part of Christmas. You know, they make the toys in Santa's workshop and everything. They look to see if the little boys and girls are being good. So I love how even in the magical world, the elves are important. Harry's other presents include a single tissue from the Dursleys, which, what the actual hell? How freaking rude! I hate them!
What's the tissue for?
Good question. Why don't they use it to blow out their nasty noses?
The salt just radiating off you is great.
Harry also gets a book called Quidditch Teams of Britain and Ireland from Hermione. A bulging bag of dung bombs from Ron, a handy pen knife with attachments to unlock any lock and undo any knot from Sirius. Hagrid gives Harry a vast box of all of his favorite sweets. Bertie Bott's Every Flavor Beans, Chocolate Frogs, Gerbil's Best Blowing Gum, and Fizzy and Wisby's. And finally, Harry has his package from Mrs. Weasley, which includes a new sweater, this one green with a picture of a dragon on it, and a large quantity of homemade mince pies. Harry and Ron meet up with Hermione in the common room and then go down to breakfast together. After this, they come back up to the common room where everybody is talking about their presents. Later, when they go down to lunch, it's amazing. There are at least 100 turkeys and Christmas puddings, and large piles of Cribbage's Wizarding Crackers. In the afternoon, they all go outside where the Weasley twins, Ron and Hermione, have a snowball fight. Hermione doesn't participate, which I don't blame her.
Oh, come on. Snowball fights are so fun. I don't know why you wouldn't participate. You can make a fort and then use it as like a bomb shelter and then just pelt people with snowballs.
Yeah, but I don't like getting snow on my hair and stuff and like on my face, so I don't think I'd enjoy this.
Aw, jeez, you're such a girl.
At 5 o'clock, Hermione goes in to start getting ready for the Yule Ball, and at 7, the boys go in too. When they get to Gryffindor Tower, the fat lady is in her portrait with her friend Violet, and they're drunk again. And at the bottom of their picture, or at the bottom of the fat lady's picture, there's empty boxes of chocolate liquor littering the bottom of the frame.
I would love to try chocolate liquor. Like, what does that taste like? Does it taste like chocolate? And if it's sweet, like, how fast does it get you drunk?
I don't know, but obviously pretty fast if they can get these two drunk.
Like we were talking about earlier with the drunkenness, how do they erase the bottles from the frame? Is there like a magical eraser?
I have no idea. I have so many questions. So now it's time for the Yule Ball. Everyone's dressed up all nicely in their dress robes. The decorations are as amazing as ever. The feast slaps and everybody gets lit at the dance. The Great Hall looks as pretty as ever. The walls are covered with sparkling silver frost. And hundreds of garlands of mistletoe and ivy cross the starry black ceiling. Instead of the house table, there are about 100 smaller round lantern-lit tables seating about a dozen people. Also, outside there are fairy lights in the rose bushes and also stone statues, including one of a reindeer. The feast is super fancy because up at the champions table, they have menus next to their plates. And in order to like place your order, you literally tell the plate what you want and then it appears. Shout out to the house elves.
That is so cool. And imagine if they actually had real dates. That would be so romantic.
Flora's going off about how the decorations at Bobatons and the food are way better than at Hogwarts, but she can just shut up because nobody wants to hear it.
There's always someone that has to complain. Like, just enjoy yourself, people.
I know, exactly. Once the dance starts, there's obviously teen drama as would be expected. Harry and Ron are salty because Harry missed out on asking Cho because he did it too late, and Ron is jealous that Hermione's with Victor Krum. So those two are not having the best time. But put yourself in their shoes. If you had a crush on a guy who asked another girl to this amazing ball on Christmas Day, wouldn't you be jealous too?
Yeah, I would. Especially because it looks like a fairy tale. And so they're probably like, oh, they're gonna fall in love at this beautiful ball. And here we are sitting like duds, you know, just watching the proceedings.
I know. This is literally my dream. Like, somebody asked me to a fancy, pretty Christmas dance. But overall, how amazing would it be to have a dance on Christmas at Hogwarts? Christmas isn't Christmas without a full-blown Christmas party, which is what Slughorn does in Half-Blood Prince. So let's talk about his Christmas party. Before we get to the party itself, I just want to mention that this is a huge deal. Even though Slughorn is low-key a creep, this party is exclusive and everybody wants to go. Slughorn especially wants Harry to go, and during a herbology class, Hermione tells Harry that he can't weasel out of this one because even though Harry has been ditching all of Slughorn's parties previously, Slughorn made it a point to ask Hermione when Harry is free so he can be sure that he's at the party. Ron overhears this and is like, is this another party for Slughorn's favorites? When Hermione clarifies that yes, it's for the Slug Club, Ron has the best response ever. Slug Club, repeated Ron with a sneer worthy of Malfoy. It's pathetic. Well, I hope you enjoy your party. Why don't you try hooking up with McLagan? Then Slughorn can make you King and Queen Slug. I love his like attitude, it's so great.
I'm just picturing two cartoon slugs wearing crowns, and it's amusing me so much currently.
It's so funny. Oh my god, I love it. Things get hella awkward because obviously we know Ron and Hermione are secretly in love with each other, and Hermione tells Ron that they're allowed to bring guests, and she was going to ask Ron, but she's not going to anymore if he thinks it's that stupid. The pair go on, and this puts Harry in a very awkward situation because he saw this coming, and then he starts to wonder, like, how things would be if they dated and then broke up. Ron and Hermione continue having major problems, but Harry has to focus on who he's taking to Slughorn's party, and he ends up asking Luna. When he asks her, Luna says she'd love to go, and she also says that she's never been asked to a party before as friends. This makes my heart so happy that Harry asked her as a friend, and she's all for it, and this is when Harry's eyebrows yellow because of a transfiguration disaster, and she even asks him if she should make her eyebrow yellow too. Like, I love Luna here. I love it.
Luna is honestly the best person you could ever invite to a party because she has some cool eccentric outfits and she's always enthusiastic and happy, so it would literally make my day to bring Luna to a party. Like, she'd make it even better than it already is.
Totally, and I love here that Luna's finally realizing that Harry's a friend because Christmas is a time for friendship too, and Luna hasn't really had friends, and now she does, and being asked to this exclusive party probably makes her feel so special.
And she is special. She's my favorite character, you guys.
I love her so much. And Slughorn definitely knows how to throw a party. There's loud conversations and music. The ceiling and walls of his office are draped with crimson, emerald, and gold hangings, and this makes it appear as though they're all inside a vast tent. Also, there's an ornate golden lamp dangling from the center of the ceiling, and real live fairies are inside it. How awesome.
What is with their obsession with fairies? Are they only good for light?
I don't know, but I love fairies, and they remind me of Christmas, so I'm for it.
I think it's funny because I picture Slughorn as like a ringmaster at a circus, and he's underneath a tent. for his party.
I love that image. Oh my god. Also, house elves are moving about the room carrying food on silver platters. Shout out to the elves. We stan.
Also, think about how heavy those platters are. Like, they must be really strong. So, yay for them. I hope they get food afterwards because they're great.
In a nutshell, Slughorn introduces Harry to a bunch of guests. Luna is as entertaining as ever. Hermione is trying to dodge McLagan. And Harry gets pulled into some very awkward conversations with Trelawney, Snape, and Slughorn. And then things just completely go downhill when Filch comes in with Draco. And the whole mood is completely gone. We see that this is a party full of awkward conversations and trying to avoid certain people. And I can totally relate to this.
Yeah, this is really relatable because oftentimes at parties, you have relatives who get too boisterous or you have relatives that are just weird in general and you want to avoid them. So it kind of dampens the mood of the party a little bit. So that's definitely a thing here.
I've definitely had those experiences, and you also have those relatives who ask you the same questions like, how's school? Do you have a boyfriend? All that stuff that you don't want to talk about. Because it's like those cookie cutter answers that you always give to everybody. So yeah, I totally feel Harry's awkward experiences here.
This is true. And with the boyfriend question, if you say no, you get judged. And if you say yes, they ask you about him and it's even worse.
Well, I never said yes, so I just got judged.
Now let's apparate over to number 12, Grimmauld Place, for Harry's Christmas in Order of the Phoenix. So Harry and the Weasleys spend Christmas at Grimmauld Place with Sirius. Sirius is so happy that he sings carols as they put up Christmas decorations, including God Rest Ye Merry Hippogriffs. That is so funny. I want to hear the words to this song. Like, someone please write it for me and, like, play it for me on Christmas Day.
Don't ask Peeves to do it. It'll be all dirty and rude.
Well, we do have a Christmas elf on this podcast who might write it for us. Demi.
God rest ye merry hippogriffs, just spread your wings and soar. Through magic skies of falling snow, be blessed forevermore. The Christmas joy is in the air, much brighter than before. Oh, sweet dreams of holly and boughs, oh, sweet dreams of holly and boughs.
So the house was barely recognizable. The tarnished chandeliers were no longer hung with cobwebs, but with garlands of holly and gold and silver streamers. Magical snow glittered in heaps over the threadbare carpets. A great Christmas tree, obtained by Mundungus and decorated with live fairies, and even the stuffed elf heads on the hall wall, wore Father Christmas hats and beards.
I love how they made Mundungus get the tree. That's like labor. It's like, all right, Mundungus, you suck, so you're getting the tree.
I mean, he probably stole the tree, but the fact that the elves have hats and beards is so funny because it's like a gruesome scene, but they're trying to make it whimsical. Also, I love how Sirius makes a huge effort here to make it look nice for everybody. I mean, think about it. He was in Azkaban for 12 years, then he was in hiding, and now he's finally getting his very first Christmas with Harry and the Weasleys and all of his loved ones all around him, which is just so magical, and he deserves it. On Christmas morning, we see that Ron got a broom compass from Harry and a homework planner from Hermione. Hermione gave Harry a book that looked like a diary but said things like, "Do it today or later you'll pay," every time he opened a page. I would rip that book to shreds. Like, that would freak me out.
I, like, have a good memory, so I never did the whole planner thing, so I think that would just straight up annoy me.
It really would, because it's like there's another presence yelling at you. It's like your mom was put in a book.
Imagine a book like that with Mrs. Weasley's voice as like the voice that yelled out.
Yeah, it's like a book, but it's a howler too. Harry also got a set of books called Practical Defensive Magic and Its Use Against the Dark Arts with moving color illustrations from Lupin and Sirius, a furry brown wallet that had fangs from Hagrid, which it's supposed to be an anti-theft device, but Harry can't even open it because it's like biting him, which is so funny.
Throwback to the Monster Book of Monsters.
He also gets a working model of a firebolt from Tonks, a box of every flavor beans from Ron, a hand-knitted sweater with mince pies from Mrs. Weasley, and an ugly painting of Harry that Dobby made for him. The twins apparate in front of Harry's bed and tell the boys not to go downstairs because Mrs. Weasley is crying. Percy sent his sweater back with no note and never asked about Mr. Weasley or visited him. That is so rude.
I'm like so baffled right now. Like, the Weasley family is all about love and being together, and then you have Percy who like doesn't give a crap about any of them.
He's terrible. Fred says they tried to comfort Mrs. Weasley and said that Percy's nothing more than a humongous pile of rat droppings. But this doesn't work, so Lupin's the man for the job. He's comforting her. Fred changes the subject, asking what the painting is supposed to be because it looks like a gibbon with two black eyes. That's so funny. I don't even know. What the hell is a gibbon?
I don't know.
Alright, so apparently a gibbon is a monkey. That's kind of rude. But I mean, humans come from monkeys, so I guess it's a compliment.
What?
They do! They come from monkeys! We have like a similar like genus or something. We're like related to apes or something. It's like all about evolution.
I know. Oh my god. Oh, that was so funny. But I can't really blame Dobby. Like, he tried his best and this is what we got. But it's really funny.
So George like is straight with his brother and he tells him that the painting's of Harry and it says so on the back, which is even funnier because like Dobby can't draw, so he basically is like, Harry Potter, this is you.
Oh my god.
And then Fred says it's a good likeness.
It's so funny. Oh my god.
Harry's reaction is so valid because he throws his homework diary at him, which hits the wall, falls to the floor, and then says, if you've dotted the I's and crossed the T's, then you may do whatever you please.
Oh my god, I hate that book.
I hate it so much, but I love how it rhymes. On their way downstairs, they run into Hermione, who thanks Harry for her new book, New Theory of Numerology. Boring. And Ron for his unusual perfume. Basically, unusual means that the perfume smells bad. Hermione is also holding a wrapped patchwork quilt that she made for Creature. On their way to Creature's bedroom to deliver the gift, they pass Mrs. Weasley cooking at the stove, and when she wishes them Merry Christmas, she sounds like she has a bad head cold. Poor Mrs. Weasley, like, her husband is in the hospital and her son sucks. Finally, they reach a dingy door opposite the pantry and Ron knocks before opening it. The majority of the space inside is taken up by the boiler, and underneath it is Creature's small nest of gross food scraps, rags, blankets, and pillaged black family heirlooms, including the picture of Bellatrix. After Hermione places her present inside and closes the door, they have a discussion with Sirius about where Creature could be. They hadn't seen Creature since Sirius had ordered him out of the kitchen. Ironically, Harry's right in his assumptions that Creature left.
Yeah, but why even give him a present? Like, it blows my mind. Like, I know Hermione loves the elves and is all for elf rights and everything, but Creature is not a nice elf, and she's out here giving him a present.
I don't know. I think maybe he's just lonely. Maybe he deserves a present.
Go be friends with Hermione.
They all eat lunch, and Mundungus shows up during Christmas pudding and trifle, having borrowed a car with an enlarging spell on it so that he could drive the Weasleys, Harry, Hermione, Moody, and Lupin to St. Mungo's to visit Mr. Weasley. Once there, they see that the reception area is decorated for Christmas. I love this. As a person who was in the hospital last year before and after Christmas with my whole appendix debacle, the fact that they decorate just makes it like a better experience to be in the hospital, even when you feel like crap. The crystal orbs that illuminated St. Mungo's had been turned to red and gold so that they became gigantic, glowing Christmas baubles. Holly hung around every doorway, and shining white Christmas trees covered in magical snow and icicles glittered in every corner, each topped with a gleaming gold star. That's so nice!
Shout out to the healers for making it look so pretty.
Yeah, honestly. It's hilarious though because they see a witch with a walnut jammed up her left nostril, and the receptionist remarks that it must have been a family argument and that she's the third person she's seen today. That's great!
Imagine being magical though, like imagine how like crazy fights would get. Like you can throw stuff, you can do magic, cast spells, do all these crazy things. Like imagine how bad wizard fights could get.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, imagine if it was something worse up her nose. Or imagine if her nose was broken. That would suck too.
Oh my god.
But at least if her nose is broken, she can't smell the blood.
What? You can still smell if your nose is broke?
You can?
Yeah!
No, you can't!
Yes, you can! It doesn't destroy your scent of smell!
When they get up to Mr. Weasley's room, they see that he just finished his turkey dinner and give him their gifts. He adores Harry's gift of fuse wire and screwdrivers. Like, this is a bunch of crap that he gets, but he still loves it, which makes me laugh so much.
He loves muggle things.
But then everything hits the fan when Mrs. Weasley notices that Mr. Weasley's bandages have been changed a day early. It's revealed that the trainee healer, Augustus Pye, used stitches on Mr. Weasley's wound, but they didn't work. While Mrs. Weasley incurs her wrath on Mr. Weasley, everyone bails. Poor Mr. Weasley. He tried something, but it didn't work.
I think it's so funny that Mr. Weasley is so fascinated with muggle things that he's like, ooh, it's a muggle remedy. Let's try it. Let's try stitches. When you literally got bit by a snake with venom that's like very poisonous, and instead of trying to heal it with magic, that the magic isn't really doing the best work. You're trying for muggle stitches? Like, I can't believe the healer agreed to this. Where did the healer even get the stitches? Did he go to, like, a muggle hospital and was like, hey, I have this patient who got bit by a snake. I need stitches. My magic's not working.
Yeah, and I think it's so funny because Mrs. Weasley remarks that he's, like, sewn together, and that's literally what stitches are. Like, honestly, Mrs. Weasley shouldn't have left Arthur in this hospital because he just screwed himself up.
Jess and I are so lucky because our two pet thestrals took us on the best sleigh ride to the Burrow so we can talk about Harry's Christmas with the Weasleys. On Christmas Eve, Harry gets a real family Christmas experience. Everybody's in the living room and Ginny decorated it so lavishly, it's described as being stuck in a paper chain explosion. Even better, the angel on the top of the tree is actually a gnome that bit Fred on the ankle earlier while he was pulling up carrots for Christmas dinner. The gnome is painted gold, it's stuffed into a miniature tutu, and there's angel wings glued to its back. This is fantastic.
This is the funniest thing I've ever heard. And it's probably stuffed so thoroughly in there that its little legs can't move, and so it's basically just paralyzed at the top of the tree waiting for someone to take it down. And if you don't take your tree down until like January, that gnome's gonna be up there for a while.
Yeah, and the poor thing's stupefied, so like you said, it's like frozen up there. It's such a funny image though.
I didn't know stupefy spells could last that long.
I wonder if they have to like re-stupefy, like consistently re-stupefy it.
Yeah, wakes up in the middle of the night, makes a sound, and they go downstairs like, stupefy!
So, we just talked about how amazing this tree topper is, but if you could have anything Wizarding World related as your tree topper, what would you want it to be? I think it'd be cute to have a phoenix as a tree topper, or an owl.
Imagine putting like a little angel costume on Hedwig and making her sit at the top of the tree.
Aww, I love that. Music is a big part of Christmas, and that's no different with the Weasley family. Molly is making everybody listen to a Christmas special by Celestina Warbeck, and Fleur isn't vibing with this, so she's talking really loud. And just to prove what a badass she is, Molly consistently points her wand at the volume and turns it up.
That is so great. There's always someone on Christmas who complains about the music and is like, this is too old-fashioned, or this is too, like, recent, where's the old carols? Like, no one can ever be pleased, and Fleur is definitely that person.
Honestly, I run the music, so I do the same thing Molly does here. Like, if somebody's complaining, I just ignore their complaints and turn it up. Games are also a big part of the holiday, and the twins and Jenny start playing Explode and Snap. Do you have a favorite game that you play with your family on Christmas?
I don't have a favorite Christmas game, but when I was little, my dad and I would play board games on Christmas break, and we'd have a little score sheet taped to the back door, and it would tell everybody like our wins and our losses, and so that by the end of Christmas break, whoever won got like an extra dessert or something like that. And the one game I always played was Sorry. I love Sorry. I'm mean at Sorry. I'm very competitive and rude.
I love that. That's awesome. My family, like the last couple years, obviously not this year, but the last couple years, we had a lot of people over for a Christmas party, and we always play charades, and it's really fun.
Oh, that's so fun. Yeah, on Thanksgiving, our tradition is karaoke at my great aunt's house, and my dad sings terribly, and our one cousin sings fantastic, so it's so funny when they go back to back.
That's awesome. I'd be down for that. The fire is also crackling in the fireplace. I know for me, I love being all cozy by the fire and by the Christmas tree on Christmas Eve.
Me too. It's so peaceful sitting there. And then having like some cider with you and maybe a good book or listening to some music. It's just beautiful. I love Christmas.
Totally. So Mr. Weasley gets everybody eggnog, and the night wraps up with Lupin and the Weasleys having various conversations until Fleur has to mimic Celestina Warbeck, and Molly gets really upset, and this completely ruins Christmas Eve, and everybody goes to bed. Like, what the heck? Why does she have to suck?
I know. Bill deserves so much better.
So by this point, Harry should be used to getting woken up on Christmas Day, because this year isn't any different. He gets woken up when Ron says, she's got to be joking. And when Harry realizes what he's talking about, he finds it absolutely hysterical, because it's a necklace with my sweetheart dangling from it in gold letters. And it's from Lavender.
She's so extra.
It's so weird. I can't stand Lavender. Then Ron and Harry have your typical teenage boy conversation where Ron is asking Harry if he thinks Hermione is really dating McLagan, but we all know that Ron would love to share some special Christmas moments with Hermione despite dating Lavender, let's be real. After this conversation, the boys get down to opening their presents in the stockings at the end of their beds. Harry's presents are a sweater with a large golden snitch on it from Mrs. Weasley, a large box of Weasley's Wizard Wheezes products from the twins, and a slightly damp, moldy-smelling package with a label that says, To Master from Creature. Harry starts to feel a little guilty that he didn't give Creature anything and starts to wonder if Masters give their house elves presents, but his feelings completely change when he opens it and finds it full of maggots. That's disgusting.
That's so gross. Oh god, I hate bugs. I really hate bugs because I can't see them and they're everywhere and they freak me out, so I would just scream and run to take a shower.
I totally agree. So when everybody goes downstairs, they're all wearing their Weasley sweaters except for Fleur. Shout out to Molly for not making her one because she doesn't deserve it. And Molly is rocking some new gifts. She's wearing a midnight blue witch's hat that's glittering with what looks like tiny star-like diamonds, and a spectacular golden necklace that Fred and George gave her. I love how the twins are spending money on Molly because she did so much for them over the years, and she continues to do so much for them and the rest of the family, so I love how they're repaying her with awesome gifts.
I agree, she deserves everything. And since Fleur's not part of the family yet, it's so funny how she doesn't have a sweater. Molly's like in denial. She's like, you will never be a part of my family.
Yeah, but Fleur doesn't deserve one. She really doesn't. She treats the whole family like garbage. Christmas lunch is full of awkward moments. First, Ginny picks a maggot out of Harry's hair. Then Ron tries to impress Fleur by passing her the gravy, but this doesn't go well, and it goes flying. Luckily, Bill waves his wand and returns the gravy back into its boat. Molly and Lupin have a pretty tense conversation because Molly mentions that she invited Tonks, but she's not coming. And Lupin says that Tonks has her own family to go to, but Molly got the impression that Tonks was spending Christmas alone and shoots Lupin an annoyed look like it's all his fault. While Harry and Lupin are having a pretty awkward conversation about Tonks' Patronus situation, Molly freaks out because she looks out the window and sees Percy coming toward them with the minister, Scrimgeour. Percy says, "Merry Christmas, Mother," all stiffly when he comes into the house. Molly's obviously very excited, so she throws herself into his arms. Scrimgeour explains that they were in the area for work and Percy just couldn't resist stopping by to see his family, which is the biggest lie.
It really is. He sucks.
Molly asks Scrimgeour to sit down and join them, but Scrimgeour declines, saying that he'll give them some time to catch up with Percy, and he'll take a little stroll outside through the garden, and asks Harry to accompany him. Basically, this doesn't go well at all. It's basically a whole thing to try to get Harry to join the ministry, and the whole thing with the Chosen One comes up. But in the end, Harry shuts Scrimgeour down, saying he's Dumbledore's man through and through, and that's that. And so basically, Scrimgeour wasted his time. How would you feel if somebody completely crashed your Christmas celebrations like Scrimgeour did?
I'd be really annoyed. Like, honestly, does he have anything better to do on Christmas? Like, does he have no family to go to? Is his job more important than his family? Like, why would you do that to someone?
Yeah, and it's ridiculous that he would actually think Harry would join the ministry and support Scrimgeour and everything that the ministry is doing, because Harry would never do that. So basically, he wasted time on his own Christmas and Harry's too, which is so rude. Like, he's showing up at the Burrow where Harry's spending Christmas. Like, Harry doesn't even live there, and he's showing up with this grand plan to, like, corner him and talk to him about this.
He totally overstays his welcome all the time, and that annoys me so much about him.
It definitely does.
So we've talked about some good and not so good Christmases that Harry experiences, but in the end, where would you like to spend Christmas?
Definitely Hogwarts. Like, I love the Burrow that is with, you know, all the Weasleys, and Grandma Place is special too, but there's just something extra magical about the castle on Christmas, the way they decorate, and everybody there mostly is Harry's big family. And spending it there is just so magical. So I would love to spend Christmas at Hogwarts.
Yeah, that's my answer as well. Because if you think about it, you have 7 years at Hogwarts and the rest of your life to spend Christmas with your family. So why not spend it at the best castle ever? So next, what's your favorite present that Harry got?
Well, I love the invisibility cloak, but other than that, I think my favorite present he got is the Firebolt, just because that's perfect for him. Like, Harry getting the Firebolt is like somebody giving me like a microphone or a certificate for like studio time or something. Like, Quidditch is his thing. So, like, I love how Sirius puts so much thought and investment into that gift.
Honestly, for me, any magical object would be my favorite present, so the invisibility cloak is definitely number one, but if I had to pick a second favorite, I would say all of the sweaters, because they're made with love, and it just really shows how Harry has a family throughout the series.
I agree, and the way Molly makes them for Harry especially, it's like all of them symbolize something. Like, he had the one with the dragon on it for the Tribe of the Tournament, one has a snitch on it because he plays Quidditch and he's a seeker, so I love how they're meaningful too.
Yeah, and the lion was probably really detailed and cool too. So finally, let's talk about shopping. Hogsmeade looked like a Christmas card. The little thatched cottages and shops were all covered in a layer of crisp snow. There were holly wreaths on the doors, and strings of enchanted candles hanging in the trees. There's also a Christmas tree next to the fireplace and the three broomsticks. I love Hogsmeade. What is your favorite shop in the village?
Well, I would love to spend time in the Three Broomsticks, but that's not really a shop. So if I'd have to pick from the shops, Honeydukes, definitely. But a close second for me would be Gladrag's Wizardwear, because imagine all the cozy scarves, socks, sweaters, hats, and festive clothes that you can buy there.
As a writer, I would have to say that my favorite would be Scrivenshaft's Quill Shop, because that's where Hermione got Harry that really cool quill. And imagine all of the different ways you could write and send letters by owl. That is just so cool.
Yeah, I love that too. I love the eagle feather quill she got him. I love it. What would you buy for yourself in Hogsmeade?
I would probably buy myself either a quill from the quill shop or something from Gladrag's Wizardwear. Because think of all of the cozy things that are inside there. Like, I could buy a new robe, maybe some slippers, maybe a nice scarf.
I would buy myself some chocolate frogs at Honeydukes because I love chocolate. And then I would stop at Gladrag's Wizardwear and buy myself a sweater. So, what would you buy from me?
So, for you to me, I'd probably go to Honeydukes and buy you fudge.
I'm down with that. I love fudge.
What would you buy for me?
I would buy you some sugar quills because you like sweet things too. And so you can technically like eat the quill as you're writing.
That's so cool.
What would you buy for Luna?
For Luna, I'd probably buy her a quill because she can put it behind her ear like she does with her wand when she puts it away for safekeeping.
That's a really cute idea.
What would you buy for Neville?
First of all, I wouldn't be just buying Neville something. We go on a whole date. So what would happen is we're going to Hogsmeade where we're going to chill. We're going to chill out by the fire and the tree with glasses of butterbeer. And then we're going to go to Honeydukes and I'm going to buy him a bunch of chocolate frogs and peppermint toads. And then we're going to go to Gladrag's Wizardwear and get matching sweaters.
You are so extra, it's ridiculous. Okay, so we've already touched on Honeydukes, but what's your favorite candy from there?
I can't pick just one, so this is my shopping list at Honeydukes. Chocolate frogs, fudge flies, Honeydukes chocolate, Honeydukes fudge, peppermint toads, and sugar quills.
So for me, I'd buy Choco Balls, Chocolate Frogs, Drupal's Best Blowing Gum, Fizzing Whizbees, Honeydukes Fudge, Jelly Slugs just to try them, Levitating Sherbet Balls because I love sherbet. I'd want to try the pink coconut ice, and I definitely want sugar quills, toffees, and I definitely want the tooth flossing string mints just to see what they're like. And it does the job for me, so why not?
Lastly, what would you buy at Zonko's?
I would probably buy pretty much everything, so it'd be kind of fun to use the stink pellets on someone I don't like, along with the dung bombs, and then as like a little prank on one of my siblings, I give them the hiccup sweets and the frog spawn soap. And then to my arch enemy, I give them nose biting teacups.
I would totally get the hiccup sweets because hiccups are the worst and they'd be the best prank to pull because I hate hiccups and I get them at the worst times, especially when I'm recording or something. I have to wait until they go away. And also trick, this works every single time. Here's the magical 7 for everybody. If you drink 7 sips of water, your hiccups will go away. Like, I'm not even joking. Like, I do it all the time.
That is literally not true because I've done that and it doesn't work for me.
It works for me, so I guess I'm magical and you're not.
Rude. But no, honestly, I was just telling you how I dole them out. Like, the nose-biting teacups are perfect because I have a bunch of friends who drink tea And so it would be so freaking funny. Now, it wouldn't be funny for me because I wouldn't be able to see it coming, but it would be funny for other people. Thank you guys so much for listening. We hope you have a very Merry Christmas. And if you want to answer any of the questions that we just asked each other in the wrap-up, please feel free to do so and tag us on social media.
Our next episode comes out on January 8th, which is our first episode of 2021. So stay tuned for that. Thank you guys so much again for listening. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for spending your Christmas with us. We hope that we provided you with some laughs, Christmas cheer, and a little bit of magic. Headwood's theme, which was originally composed by John Williams, and the Christmas carols in this episode were arranged by me. Happy Christmas!